No, no kidding.
Okay, Ray, don't let us all sleep.
Where else except A can you get introduced by Bob Marley? Is that cool or what?
Happy birthday, Bob.
I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. This here looks like some bedrooms I've been in. This is just great. Mirrors on the ceiling. I like that. I'm just saying. That's all. I was at the dance last night. They started playing Crimson and Clover, and this little short guy with a mustache come up and asked me to dance. And shit, I just went back to my room. Hell with it. I want to thank Jeff and the committee for asking me to come and participate here at your conference, and I want to thank my friend Frank for picking me up at the airport and hosting me, and also his lovely wife, and there's a contingent here from San Jose that Yolanda and shit, I'm sorry I mentioned them. They're a heartache. And I'm glad they're here, and it's just good to be here, and it's good to be sober. And you've heard this before, but if Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, there'd be somebody else standing up here tonight. I can tell you this, that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to sit in the back. I wanted to be noticed, but I didn't want anybody to talk to me. I didn't know what the 12 traditions and the 12 steps in Chapter 5 had to do with anything that dealt with my problems. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I thought it might be Budweiser or Marlboro or something. And I didn't know how you go about getting one of those. And I'm glad that I stuck around long enough to find some things out when I had to sit here and shut my mouth and listen. And what I found out was, is the more effort I put into Alcoholics Anonymous, the better my life got outside these rooms. I don't have a problem inside Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a problem out there in society. They don't like me very much, and I don't understand it, but they don't, and, but I don't like them either, and I stuck around long enough to find out that if I put an effort into Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would get back in harmonious living in direct proportion, and I'm glad I found that out. And I got to tell you, I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, I don't look like one. Look at me. Would it be all right if I just give my talk looking at that? I just... you are beautiful, dude. Oh, he's over here, too. Check him out. God, I love that. You folks look like alcoholics. That's why the camera ain't on you, okay? I was born in Danville, Illinois, and I had great parents. Mom and Dad were not alcoholic, and all they did for me and my two brothers is provide a good home for us to grow up in, teach us right from wrong, and taught us principles and character, and raised us right. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did that inventory, read it to my sponsor, and we talked about my defects of character and shortcomings. I didn't think I had any. But we talked about mine, and I found out that I grew up being a liar, and it's easier to lie than it is to tell the truth. When you tell the truth, it's just out there, and you can't change it. But when you're a liar, you can be anything you want to be. I've been an airline pilot. I've been a plumber. I've been a gynecologist. You can be anything you want to be when you're a liar. I stole all the time because it's easier to steal than it is to stand in line and pay for something. When you leave the store, you got the item and your money. You're a double winner. I like that. And I cheated because I never want to work hard and earn anything. I'm lazy. I'm self-centered. Give me, lend me, can I have, let me borrow, do for me, help me out, give me a huss. And I didn't analyze that. I don't analyze my childhood. I don't put a teddy bear in a little backpack and search for my inner child. If I ever find my inner child, I'll choke him out. That's what the hell is going to happen to him. But I found those all those things out. That's how I was as a kid. And I wanted to be a macho tough guy. And I grew up with Wild Bill Hickok and Lash LaRue. And I wore glasses and I was skinny. And I was afraid of the dark and I couldn't tell anybody about that. And I was ashamed of that. And it made me feel like a wimp and a wussy. And that's how I was before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I played sports, though, and I won 9 varsity letters. And I had a scholarship offer to go play basketball in college. And those things didn't make me alcoholic. The first time I drank was at a party in Danville. It was really a hot summer night, and all the guys from the ball team were there and our girlfriends. And my girlfriend brought me over a big iced tea glass full of Slow Gin with 7-Up in it. And I didn't know what Slow Gin was. I'd never heard of it. And it was red, and it had ice in it, and it looked like strawberry Kool-Aid to me. And that's my drink of choice. I love that stuff. And I took a little drink of it, and it tasted a little bit like strawberry Kool-Aid. So I chug-lugged that big iced tea glass down. And nothing happened. It wasn't a big deal. And I said, give me another one. She brought another one. I drank that down. And I didn't throw on an old wrinkled trench coat and throw a bottle of wine in a paper bag and shoot to Skid Row. I didn't talk to everybody. Hey, how do I become an alcoholic? I want to be up in Sacramento. You know, that's, I want to speak up there someday. Shit, that's great. There's a claim to fame. And I wasn't drinking for the taste or the effect or what alcohol was doing to me or for me or the things I've heard at AA. I was drinking for one reason and one reason only. All my buddies at that party were drinking. All my buddies were having a great time. They were dancing and laughing and necking with their girlfriend in the corner. And I can't do that. I'm self-centered and I don't know how to dance. So I don't want you to make fun of me. I don't want to talk to you. You're going to think I'm stupid. And so, you know, I thought if I drank like those guys drank, I'd have the fun those guys are having. And that's why I drank that night. And I powered down almost a gallon of Slow Gin in about 30 minutes. Nothing happened. It wasn't no big deal. But about 20 minutes after I drank that last glass, I found out where Slow Gin got its name. Yeah, I went into a blackout and I got taken home that night and I passed out and the next morning when I come to, I'm just puking everything up all over the place. I'm throwing up everything I'd eat and drink at the party that night. My head's pounding, my stomach's upset, and something else is funny. I don't remember how I got home. Now, I thought everybody at that party experienced what I experienced. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out what a blackout was. See, I didn't remember anything because I had a blackout. And the old timers in my home group told me, Frank, a blackout is when you consume alcohol. You'll go out and do whatever it is you're going to do that night. And the next morning, you'll have amnesia about all or parts of that night. Normal drinkers don't have those. And that just removed any doubt for me because I had a blackout the first time I drank. I missed 3 days of school with a terrible hangover, and I went back to school, and the guys snapped me up, and they said, hey, man, it was great last night. You were out there dancing and laughing and funny, and some guy said something, and he punched his ticket, and, you know, I don't remember any of it, but evidently I had a hell of a time. You know, I liked that, and, you know, I felt a part of those guys. I felt the fraternity and the brotherhood. And the other thing I got from that night to tonight is I don't drink 7-Up anymore. 7-Up will make you throw stuff up and then you forget things and it's just not good for you. You see, this is the only disease in the world that will kill you and your head will always blame something else. And the very first time I got drunk, I blamed something else. This is the only disease in the world that will take your life and you'll try to convince yourself you don't have it. And I blamed the 7-Up that night. And I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic after that and get the shakes in study hall when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it. When I drank on weekends and stuff, I got in fights. Why? I'm full of fear. I didn't know that. I thought this is just what macho guys do. And so I'm starting to get in trouble in school. And then about 2 weeks before graduation, I have a committee now that talks to me. And my committee said, what if you go to that college, Frank, and you don't make the basketball team and you don't get grades good enough to stay on the team? Well, that filled me with fear. It just scared the hell out of me. I don't want to go to college and look bad in front of all those other kids and stuff. What my head told me was, is you don't want to go to college anyway. You're tired of school. It's boring. You don't want to do that. And so 2 weeks before I was supposed to graduate, I quit high school. You can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate. So I quit school. Made sense to me at the time. And then I'm out drinking with the guys a couple of weeks later, and I had another keen alcoholic thought. We have keen alcoholic thoughts. I'm going to tell you that. They're good ones. I decided to join the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy, do not go in the Marine Corps. Join the Army. Or the Navy. It doesn't matter. And the dude that spoke that said he was in the Air Force, that ain't even the military. For God's sakes, you gotta tune in. Well, I'll get the rest of yous. I'll offend the rest of yous later. So I joined the Marine Corps, and I'm on a train going up to Chicago to get sworn in, and I'm homesick and lonely, and the train ain't moved out of Danville Station yet. And I'm sitting next to a guy, he's got a black leather jacket on, and he's got the chains on it and the doodads, and he's got long sideburns and a ducktail haircut, and he's going into the Marine Corps. And I want to hang out with this dude in Chicago because I'm full of fear. I can't tell anybody about that fear. I'm ashamed of that. But I want to hang out with this dude in Chicago because he looks like a bad dude. And he's drinking out of a little brown bottle, and he asked me if I wanted some of it. And I said, sure, I'll take a hit off of it. And I took the bottle, I chugged like two or three big mouthfuls of it. It was whiskey. Now, I don't know how you drank whiskey when you were 17, but I'll tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. I had whiskey coming out my nose. My eyes were watering. Should I? And I, you know, I got to look good, and I wiped my face off, and I said, you know, that's pretty good. And he says, you want some more? I said, I can't breathe right now. I drank to fit in and to be a part of. That's why I drank. I got sworn in up in Chicago, and they flew me down to Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. I went through boot camp scared. Went through boot camp homesick. I can't tell any of those other guys about it in my platoon. I'm ashamed of that because they didn't look like they felt the way I did. They looked like men. They were all 18, 19, 20-year-old. And I was ashamed of how I felt. And I struggled, and I got through boot camp, and then they put me in the infantry at Camp Pendleton, and then the Cuban crisis happened in 62 in October, and we boarded ship in San Diego and went down the coast through the Panama Canal and went down in the Caribbean. We're going to war, and I'm full of fear, and I can't tell anybody about that fear. I'm ashamed of it. And nothing happened down there during that flap there, and we come back through the canal and headed over to the Far East for 13 months. And when we got there, we unpacked our gear, and the guys come up, and they said, hey, Frank, we're going out in the Ville and get drunk. You want to go with us? Well, the Ville, how cool does that sound? I don't know how many of you have been in the Ville. But the Ville is cool. And I want to go with the men and the Marines out in the Ville. And I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And we went out there and bought a Typhoon Fifth of sake. It held about 2 gallons. Cost us 75 cents. We pooled our money. And these guys, these macho Marines are passing that bottle of sake around, and they're chug-a-lugging it, and they're doing the male bonding ritual that guys do when they're drinking. They're headlocking each other and hugging and shit, doing knuckle push-ups. They're ooh-rawing. I love that stuff. And, you know, the bottle gets to me, and I chug-a-lug three or four big mouthfuls of it. I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17. I sprayed that crap all over their shoes. I got sake coming out my nose, and they're all laughing and pointing at me, and they're making fun of me, and I feel like a wimp, and I hate that feeling. And you know that bottle come around again, and I chug-a-lug some more, and I puked it up, and I drank some more, and I threw it up, and I learned something that night in Okinawa. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you cannot let looking bad bother you. You just got to hang in. See, I think that's important. And, we hung in, didn't we? And I finally held enough sake down, and I don't know what alcohol did for you when you drank. But I'll tell you what alcohol did for me. I held enough of that sake down. I looked at those five or six Marines I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? Alcohol made me all I could be. And I left those guys. I don't need them. I went out drinking on my own. And I'm in a bar drinking, shooting pool with a Marine from another unit. And he said something that offended me. And I hit him in the face with a pool cue. It looked cool in the movies. And he's laying there bleeding, and now I knew I shouldn't have done it. When you're in trouble, you know you're in trouble. I can tell by looking at you guys, a lot of you have been there. Yeah. And I know I was wrong, and I shouldn't have done it, and I got that fear, and I don't want to go to the brig. I'm 17-year-old, and he's laying there bleeding, and they're calling the military police, and I run out of that bar down through the alleys in Anoka, and I go in another bar. And I ordered a shooter and a beer, and I drank that down. I ordered another shooter, and I drank that down, and something funny happened. After a couple of drinks, I really didn't care if the MPs walked in that bar or not, because if they did, they ain't taking me alive. That's it. I am fighting it out with them dudes. What alcohol did for me is remove any responsibility for any of my actions. When I'm drinking, I don't care about paying my bills on time. When I'm drinking, I don't care about being faithful. I don't care about being honest. I don't care about anything when I'm drinking but me. I am the mighty I am. And so I don't care when I'm drinking. And I start bragging to the Marine sitting next to me about hitting a guy with a pool cue. And then I look down at the end of the bar and there's a Nason there, and I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to take me for every single dime I've got my entire life. It's another 12-step program, I'm telling you. And this little lady slid up next to me on a bar stool and asked me to buy her a drink, and so I bought the young lady a drink. And then she started telling me this sad story about her mom that needed surgery. And you've been there. Yeah, you have. And it just broke my heart. And so I gave the young lady some more money, and her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. And like to stand here and tell you tonight that she probably still remembers it to this day. It was so good. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And I felt like a wimp and a wussy, and it embarrassed me. And when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of her headboard and set her house on fire. It just made sense. That's all. It's just, haven't all of you done that? And I went back to the base and I passed out. And at Reveille the next morning I come to, and I'm puking up everything I'd eat and drink that night. I'm sicker than a dog. And the guys are in the head and they're telling me the MPs are looking for who hit that guy. And that guilt and that shame come back, and that fear of going to the brig and scared and knowing I did something wrong. And then they told me about the fire in the Ville. And my dad hadn't raised me to act that way. You see, he was married to my mom 50 years. I never heard that man raise his voice to my mom. He was a hard-working railroader and a good man. And I don't know where those actions came from. And I didn't know how I was going to correct that. And I was worried about that. And I found out a secret that morning in Okinawa. I opened up my locker, and there was a bottle in there with a big red dot on it. And that is called Akadama wine. And I don't know where it came from, but I took that bottle of wine down and screwed the cap on it and chug-a-lugged some of it. I didn't throw it up. So I drank some more of that wine, and by the time I went out to formation and come back in that barracks, something funny had happened. My headache was gone, my stomach settled down, and I didn't have a hangover no more. Now, I don't know what that tells you. What that tells me is if I drink in the morning, I don't have to be sick. And I went right back to that locker, got that bottle of wine out, poured some in a canteen cup, and started walking around drinking it. 20 minutes later, I start bragging about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I start bragging about setting that woman's house on fire. You see, when I drink, I think everything I do is cute. Everything I do when I'm drinking, I think it's okay to do, or I damn sure wouldn't have done it. Everything I do is okay if I do it. That's what my head says. Otherwise, why would I be doing it if I think it ain't okay? That's why I have a sponsor. When I get bright ideas now, I call him. Hey, I got a bright idea. Check this one out. It's a wonder he ain't committed suicide yet. I don't know. But I never do anything that my head hasn't said it's okay to do. That's just me. That's how I am. And once I've decided to do it, nobody can change my mind. You can tell me all the ramifications and the penalties and everything else, but if Frank Jones's head says, all right, it's good to do, I'm going to go do it. That's the same in sobriety. I'm going to tell you, I'm over 29 years sober. If my head says it's okay, I'm doing it. Nobody can talk me out of it. That's why I got a sponsor. I run things by him before I make any decision. But what happened was I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and women in the bars, and I became a bar fighter. And I'm really too light to fight and too thin to win then, and I developed the technique of ambush. And I'd make a stripe, and then the Marine Corps took it away from me. And then they'd restrict me to the base we were at, and then they restricted me to my barracks. And if you'd ever walked up to me overseas and said, you know what, Frank, every time you drink, you get in trouble, I could have looked you dead in the eye and give you reasons why alcohol had nothing to do with it. You see, this is the only disease in the world that will kill you, and you will always blame something else for your problems if you're like me. And I'd say, well, think about this. If that guy in that bar hadn't have said that to me, I wouldn't have hit him in the mouth with a glass ashtray. So it ain't my fault. He needs to learn how to talk to people in public. And if the duty NCO hadn't said, shut up and go hit the rack, I wouldn't have smacked the duty NCO. He needs to learn communication skills. So it's his fault. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a victim. I blamed my wife, the kids, the job, the police department. I blamed everybody for all my problems. It was never me. And the old timers in my home group snapped me up and said, if you want to see what the problem is, Slim, go look in the mirror. You'll see the problem. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and those 12 steps in there are made for you to work, not the people around you. Your wife don't have to work this program. Your kids don't. The boss don't. None of your friends do. You have to change and become different than you were when you walked in here, or you'll drink again. Because the person that walked into AA had to drink to live out there in that world. I'm glad I heard that. I ended up getting in a lot of trouble in Okinawa. I perceived the cab drivers were ripping us servicemen off. Their meters were fixed. They took advantage of us. And I decided to get my money back one night to drink on, and he decided to fight, and I beat his face in with a rock. And that man almost died. And they put me in the brig, and then my dad flew from Illinois to Okinawa and met with the commanding general, and he paid for the guy's surgery, and he paid for his retirement, and gave that little Scotch cab company money, and brought letters and everything, and just begged the Marine Corps not to throw me out. It's 1963. It ain't the way it is today. And something must have been, some deal was cut somewhere, because by the time paperwork went through after my court-martial to get me released from the brig and sent back to duty, I spent 337 days locked up in that brig. If you'd have told me it was behind trying to get money to drink on, I could have stood right there, looked you in the eye, and said, I ain't got nothing to do with it. They're just ripping us off. I got out of that brig. They sent me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and I went through Illinois on my way down there, and I met a girl out of high school and married her and took her down there with me. She wants me to stay home and be a husband. I'm a bar drinker. I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women in the bars. And I don't know what you'd do to get out of the house, but I tell you what I'd do. I'd start a fight with her and make it look like it's her fault. And then we're yelling and screaming at each other and cussing, and I just can't drink in a noisy place. That's just it. I just can't handle that pressure. And so I'd go out in the bars in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and I'm drinking in there, and some guy'd say something to me that evidently offended me, and I'd smack him with a bottle or something, and they'd call the Jacksonville police, and I'd go down and run in another bar and get a shooter, and I'd lock eyes with some honey, and I gotta be validated. Guys like me gotta be validated, and the way guys like me get validated is they have to have another woman. And so I hook up with another woman, we trudge to her place and do what we gotta do, and I'm laying in her bed sobering up, and I'm starting to think, and you should never drink and think. That's a bad deal. That is just ugly, and the feelings that I'm feeling are the feelings you're going to feel when you're a liar, you're a cheat, you're unfaithful, and you know you're wrong. And I'm feeling that, and I can't go home and look at that woman now. And so I stop at a bar and have a couple of shooters and a beer. Now what my head says is, that's a guy thing, man. It's just what guys do. This ain't no big deal. And I go home, and I walk in, and she says, where have you been? Well, I hate that question. Now I have to lie to her. I wouldn't be a liar if she hadn't asked that question. So it ain't my fault I'm lying. It's her fault for asking that damn question. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old timers in my home group snapped me up and said, that big book and those 12 steps, that's made for you, not your wife. Your wife is none of your business. It ain't your job to tell her what to do or what to cook or what to wear or how to clean the house. My sponsor told me, if you don't like what your wife cooks for dinner, pal, cook your own dinner and shut up about it. My sponsor told me, Jesus, the only ones clapping's the women. The guys are all sitting there grumpy. You got to be shitting me. Oh, deal with it. It's about time you started working a program. They told me if I didn't like how the house looked, to clean the house myself and keep my mouth shut about it. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a husband. I didn't have a clue. It's a relationship, and I needed to show her the respect I wanted her to show me. I had to treat her the way that I wanted to be treated. And I found out it's a two-way street. It's not a one-way street. I thought I had to be the boss. I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous that it's two people. And I needed to give her what I wanted her to give me. And then we had a kid, and I don't know how to treat kids. They cry, they make messes, they break stuff, they crap in their diapers. You know, no human should do that. Well, maybe alcoholics, but there's a reason for that. And I would shake her and I'd throw her in a crib, and that guilt and shame of being a bad father just eats me up, and the wife's starting on me and she's crying, the kid's crying. The only thing that takes away the pain of being a bad father is a couple of shots of whiskey and a beer. And then my head says, I'm teaching her discipline. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out kids are little people. But that's what kids do when they grow up. They make messes, they spill things, they move stuff around. My sponsor and the old timers in my home group told me that the only time I'm supposed to touch my children is when I'm going to put my arms around them and give them a hug. They told me to clean my language up. They told me to clean my language up around my wife and kids and the women and kids in AA. Says they don't need to hear the language you used to use out there in the bars. So knock off the F word and all this other stuff. My sponsor told me when I use that language, it's a mental midget trying to express himself forcibly. I don't know if you're a mental midget or not, but I hear a lot of young people and stuff in AA firing the F word around, and I just stand there and admire them and think how intelligent they are. If you don't change, you won't stay. And that's what I was told over and over and over again. And that included my language. Then I got called into the CO's office one day, and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it and live ammunition and sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. Vietnam is not my problem. It has never been my problem. My problem is standing here in the middle of my suit. I'm a sniper. I'm with 26 Marines up at Khe Sanh and Khon Tien in 67, 68, and I'm full of fear, and I can't tell anybody about that fear. I'm ashamed of it. And I found out a secret in Vietnam. 151 proof rum. You put that in your canteens, you drink that, you are bulletproof and invisible. What that allowed me to do is to go out on these patrols with these guys and do the things I thought I had to do to show everybody how tough I was. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over there, and I'm not proud of that. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is I can't change those things. I can't undo my past. All I have is right now, and if I put enough nows together, I'm going to have a sober tonight. That's it. What I got to do today is try not to treat people the way I used to treat them. Try not to act and do the things I used to do. I had to try to change. But I can't undo those things. But what alcohol did for me in Vietnam is saved my sanity. That's all. It saved my sanity. I ended up getting blown up over during the siege at Khe Sanh on February the 8th, and I refused medevac to stay with my guys, and when I finally got home and got out of the hospital, I went home, and then a son was born to us while I was there, and he's on the couch crying, and my daughter's growing up. She wants my attention, and the wife wants my attention, and I want to get out in the bars and talk about the war. Hell, that's us Vietnam vets. That's our only claim to fame, for Christ's sakes. I want to get out there and rap about it. And we're having a cuss fight, and we're yelling and screaming at each other. I've been home less than 2 days. And my daughter's crying, and everybody's upset, and we're yelling and cussing at each other, and I finally told her, shut up or I'll kill you. She don't believe me. And I walked in the closet and got the gun out that I'd left home for her. And I walked back in that kitchen, and I said, if you don't shut up, I'll kill you. And I got to tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I had done too many bad things to too many people. The old-timers in my home group told me there's always been a higher power in your life, and when you look back over your life, you'll see it someday. And today I see that. You see, God didn't turn and walk away from me. That didn't happen. By my actions, my language, and the things I did, I walked away from my God. That's all. And so I'm the one that had to walk back. He didn't go anywhere. And I had to clean all this out inside so he'll have a clean place to live. He ain't gonna live in a dirty house. But what happened was I'm trying to get the safety off that gun, and it's rusted. My daughter's standing here pulling on me, telling me don't shoot her mommy, and I hit a pin at the base of the receiver, and I pushed that pin in. It was a firing pin, and the gun went off. And the bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And that bullet didn't hit that little girl that day. You see, I'm a lucky man for that, because I could have accidentally shot and killed her in a drunken rage, trying to get my wife to shut up because I think I'm boss. That's where alcohol allows me to go. I don't know where alcohol allows you to go. I don't know what lies alcohol tells you that you can get away with and what you can do. I only know what alcohol does to and for me. Shortly after that, she divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot, for God's sakes. I shot myself and she split. I don't know what alcohol tells you, but alcohol tells me that I'm a good husband. That's what alcohol tells me. Alcohol tells me that I'm a good father. I don't know what kind of lies alcohol tells you, but that's what it tells me. And I drank over her taking my kids. I was a drill instructor in San Diego, and I hazed and abused the recruits and fought in the bars down there and started to carry a gun. I was getting crazier than hell. And then after 2.5 years as a drill instructor, I had a keen alcoholic thought. I need to go back to Vietnam. That's where the macho guys are. And so I volunteered and went back for a second tour. I'm in the infantry this time, and all I did is repeat my bad actions from the first time. And I did a lot of bad things. Again, alcohol saved my sanity. This time I got shot up in an ambush over there, and I come back to the States, and Marine Corps wants me to come back after noon chow. Now I've been in 11 years, and I can't do that. Now I got to drink because there's demons. Now there's things out there that I see that people ain't seeing. And I'm hearing things that people ain't hearing, and the alcohol ain't doing it, and I can't go back till I get enough. So after 11 years of active duty, I got out of the Marine Corps. And I became a police officer in Southern California. Well, you got a problem with that, punk? The hell is up with that? Freeze! All the newcomers in the back went, what? Oh, shit, do I have warrants? They just did a little mini inventory for their sponsors. I became a police officer in Southern California, and I can't tell my partner in the police car that there's demons in the alleys. I'm afraid of the dark, and so before I go to work, I drink. Drinking takes all that fear away. I'm not afraid of anything when I drink. Now what happens on the street, if you scare me, I get violent. I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that. That's just where alcohol lets me go. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I go into the institutions once in a while. I get to speak in there, and I tell those guys what I was like and what I'm trying to be like today. And I got to tell you, I'm not wonderful because I'm over 29 years sober. I ain't going to kid you. I hear people stand at these podiums, hear them talk, and I can't believe it. I think, Jesus Christ, they must have been hung on Calvary with that dude. And when I was new, I said, I'll never get where they're at. And I'm listening to, they never yell at their kids, they're never late to work, they don't cuss, they don't have impure thoughts, they don't have anything. I'm thinking, I can't do it, my head's busy all the time. And I'm not a good husband or a good father or a good man because I'm 29 years sober. What I'm trying to be is a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous because this program saves my sanity. This program allows me to live outside these rooms and feel comfortable most of the time. I'm a lot better man, husband, and father today than I was 29 years ago. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better than I was today, but, I make a lot of amends to a lot of people. You can't tell that I'm critical, abrasive, and judgmental. I am. I'm not kidding you. I'm just being honest with you. I don't want to have to come back and make amends. I hear people stand at this podium and say, I'm a completely different person than when I came to AA. And I think, what the hell did you have? Sex change operation? What's up with that? How'd you become that different? I'm going to tell you something. For me, I am exactly the person that walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. You scratch the scab off, I will bleed on you. If I am not spiritually sound, I can revert to my old self just like that. I'm going to tell you something else. I still have lust, greed, sloth, I have all those things. Envy. I have all the defects of character. All those short. I have those. What I don't let them do today most of the time is let them overrule me. I don't let them dictate how I act out there. I try not to act on the impulses and the thoughts I have. But I'm a human being. And I don't kid myself. And my sponsor told me, you're never going to rise above human. He said, you'd be lucky if you get to that level. He says, you don't have to be what this group wants you to be. You have to find out who you are and what you are. And you got to be able to start accepting that about you and start working on it. He said, in your case, you're an asshole. I can accept that. I have no problem with that. And so now I have something to work on. And he told me that when I was 10 years sober. I love my sponsor. Wouldn't change for the world. But I had to find out about me. And I had to start accepting who and what I was and start working on me. And I'm not a great guy and I'm not a nice guy. I'm going to tell you, I've had bad and good things happen in my sobriety and terrible things and happy things and sad things. The only thing I've never changed in 29 years is my commitment to this program. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. It keeps my head quiet and my stomach calm. Allows me to live outside these rooms in a world that I have a hard time living in. It's given me peace. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. What happened was I got married again and we had a kid and then my wife got pregnant and, you know, I still don't feel like a man and stuff. I still don't feel macho, so I started to have an affair with my partner. I have a female partner. I really don't care what your preference is, mine is female. And her and I are having an affair, and she found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that. And she shot me. What in the hell are you clapping for? You're a guy. At least I think you are. Jesus. All right. All you dudes sitting in here right now, I hope you've seen the women that were laughing and clapping. I'm telling you, don't date them. I don't care how hot they look. Do not date them. If you mess up, they'll shoot your ass. I'm telling you right now, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you. I can't believe it. She shot me in the head. It's all fun and games until you get shot. Then it's fun and games with a scar on your head. Right down to part, about an eighth inch of my scalp was gouged out. And rather than get gunned down in a police car, I resigned. And she's going to get her gun. Holy shit. So are they. So rather than get gunned down in a police car, I resigned. And I got a real estate license. And if you're sitting here today thinking money will fix it for you, prestige will fix it for you, big houses and big cars will fix it for you. If you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't fix alcoholism. It allows you to do it in a better environment. I made a ton of money in real estate. I bought two new Cadillacs, one for my wife, one for me, and paid cash for those two cars. We put a house on a quarter acre, put a swimming pool in, and a three-hole putting green. My kids wore designer clothes. I wore custom suits. I had diamond pinky rings and gold nugget bracelets and shit. I had a Mr. T starter kit before that dude was ever on TV. It didn't fix it. I never stooped so low, though, as to wear an earring. I never. Oh, no, some guy's going to come up and say, hey, I got an earring. I don't give a shit. I don't care. I really don't care what you've got pierced, okay? You're weird. Just don't talk to me about it. I don't care. But when Valentine's Day comes, why don't you take it and give it back to your wife or girlfriend so she'll have a match set? She'll be happy, okay? Think of others. Okay, if I ain't got you yet, I'll get you before I'm done. And money didn't fix it. And at the age of 36 years old, I stood there one day and looked around, and everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone. All I wanted to do all my life is be like my dad. A good man, a decent man, worked hard, provided for his family. And I didn't know why I kept falling short. I don't know why those things happened. No, it wasn't alcohol. Alcohol ain't got anything to do with it. It's the only disease that'll kill you, and your head will blame something else. But I ended up with everything I owned in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And everybody was gone. I had lost everything. You couldn't convince me I had a problem drinking. I ended up homeless on the streets. I ended up passing blood when I went to the bathroom. Got very sick. A woman I'd worked real estate with one day seen me walking the streets there in Simi Valley. And she put me in her car, took me to her house, and she cleaned me up. Took me to a doctor. I don't know why. And the doctor gave me a physical, and they let me go, and I went back out on the streets. And when they got the results in, she found me again and took me back in that man's office. And I sit down, and He said, Mr. Jones, he says, you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. If you don't stop drinking, you'll die before summer. He says, you have cirrhosis of the liver and a hole in your throat from vomiting and all the crap you're going to have in physical ailments if you're drinking and living and doing the things I'm doing. And when that man told me I was going to die before summer, what flooded over me was relief because I was tired. It's not easy running through everybody's life you've ever met and ruining their life and yours. That's not an easy thing to do. And when that man told me that, I stood up, I shook his hand, I thanked him, and I left his office, and the money they gave me to eat on that day, I went and bought a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer. And I drank as hard and as fast as I could, and to make a long story short, my parents found out I was dying on the streets and I wouldn't take care of myself, and they had me committed. And they had me strapped down in a hospital. And I couldn't understand that. I hadn't done nothing to them. I hadn't spoke to them in almost 4 years. And when you're strapped down, you ain't getting out. I'm telling you that right now. Don't even try. You'll just exhaust yourself. And they pumped me full of vitamin B and magnesium to help with the withdrawals. And some of them I remember and some of them I don't. And at the end of about 10 days, they unstrapped me from that bed. They threw me in a van and took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know why. I'm not an alcoholic. I walked into the meeting. There's a bunch of losers there just like you. Doing all the crap you're doing, everybody's hugging each other and shit. Hi, good to see you. You know, everybody's happy. And, you know, all the ladies, their makeup's on and their hair's done and the guys are clean and they all look good. And what I did is I judged you. See, you couldn't look as good as you look and have done the things that I had done. You couldn't have done the killing and the burning and disrespecting your wife and your kids and your parents. And you couldn't have done that. And you guys looked at me and said, get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. I thought, I'll rip your throat out. He said, no, there's too many of us. Why don't you rip a seat? It's kind of like the book study last night. And they told me to sit down, shut up, and listen. They told me to have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Go to AA if you want to drink. I heard that over and over and over at that meeting. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I left that meeting and I held you in contempt. They brought me back the next night and I looked at you again and I realized I'd misjudged you. You hadn't made the money I had made. You didn't have the houses, the car, the jewelry, the clothes, the women. You didn't have any of that crap. Look at you. You're a bunch of losers. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that shit now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Go to AA if you want to drink. And I got to tell you that if you're an alcoholic of my type, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't get yourself a sponsor. Do not get somebody that will talk to you about your issues. Your issues don't mean squat. You got an issue with me right now, probably. Your issues will change every 4 or 5 seconds. That is cycle babble. And if you're having an issue now, go home and write about it. Now that's something. Somebody show me in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it says go home and write about your issues. It doesn't say it in there. It says write a fearless and thorough moral inventory. It says make a list of people you had harmed and become willing to make. It doesn't say write about how you feel about something. It doesn't say write about how you feel about relationships. How do you feel about sex? How's your employer treating you? That is such crap. How are you treating your employer? That's the question. Get a sponsor that will get you involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, these 12 steps and the meetings. And get a commitment to meetings instead of coming in here, get a little bit of time and sucking the life out of AA. Do something to give back. We have enough people that just come in here and take. Now, they're not around long, so it's not a big deal. And we're here when they get back. But I've been a taker all my life. And if you're like me, that's what I do. Get somebody that will get you involved in your home group with a commitment to help out, to make the coffee or clean up, or to pass the basket, or to help with the sound, or carry the literature, or take the trash out. Do something to pay. It's saving your life. It's saving your sanity. Get a higher power. If you're like me. If not, what happened to me will happen to you. You see, I walked out of that hospital and I stood out there in that sun and I started crying, and all the things I had done all my life came down and started sitting on my chest. All the killing and burning in Vietnam and disrespecting parents and wives and kids is choking me out, and I don't want to drink. I haven't had a desire to take a drink in over 29 years. I had a desire to commit suicide. I had a desire to take my own life. Where do you go when you have no hope? Where do you go when you look down the tunnel and there ain't no light down there? Who do you talk to if you don't have a sponsor you can be honest with? And you're not trying to impress. You're just going to be honest. Where do you go when you haven't made any friends at any of the meetings because you don't stick around long enough to shake hands with anybody? And you don't have anybody to talk you off that ledge? Where do you go when you want to take your own life, when the pressure's on and depression and anxiety and desperation's eating you up and you have no hope? What happened to me might happen to you. I came back to California, found my wife and kids in Oregon, and got back together with them, and we moved into a garage not attached to a house, just a garage in a field. And we slept on the floor of that garage, on that cement floor. We ate out of a styrofoam chest and had government cheese and block bologna. When the kids had cereal, they put water on it, and I didn't go to meetings. I don't need AA because I don't want to drink. And at 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm driving a stolen car on the Hollywood freeway with a 45. I'm looking for work. I have to feed my children. And I'm honking at this guy in the fast lane to get out of the fast lane and let me go. I'm going somewhere. And he don't get out of my way. Now, here in Sacramento, as spiritual as you folks are, you probably just pull around him and wave at him. I rear-ended him. And I chased him off the freeway. And when he stopped, I got out of the car and I took my 45. I put it in his driver's window and I said, "You ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you." I didn't want a bourbon and water. I wanted to take that man's life. Where do you go when you get that filled with desperation and rage and you have no one to help you get off that ledge? You have no faith in a higher power. You don't know about Easy Desert or anything. You're doing it your way. 10 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in Alpha Beta. It used to be a grocery store. I'm buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. Do you think I'd buy my children milk for their cereal? I'm a taker. My head says I'm a good father. My actions totally show something else. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm into me. And I'm standing there with my Pepsi and cigarettes, and it says 10 items or less, cash only. My head said, "Count that lady's items." And I count the items. And she's got 13 items in a 10-item line. That probably don't aggravate you, okay? I understand that. But I like to think about things. I don't know if you like to analyze and know what's why, but I do. I want to know the reasons. Is 12 eggs 12 items? Or is it just a dozen eggs? 2 half-gallons of milk. Is that milk or 2 items? There's 4 apples in the bag. Is that apples or 4 more items? By the time I got through, she had about 30 items. And I'm pissed. And I'm angry. And I can't back anger off. I don't know about you. And I'm standing there. I'm ready to launch. And she broke her checkbook out. I said, "You can't write a check. All you got to do is read the sign. It's in English. It says cash only." And she smiled, said, "I'll be through in a minute, Sonny." I said, "My name ain't Sonny, lady. And I'm not Sonny now." And I said, "You're not writing a check." And I grabbed her shit and threw it all over Alpha Beta. Eggs, milk, everything. Now that will get 4 large sheriffs called on you. I didn't want a pina colada. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated her. Now, you probably won't get that way. Don't worry about it. That's how I get. At 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings, I'm in a real estate office trying to interview for a job, and Mike Gill walks by and he said, "Hey, Frank, how you doing, bud?" I said, "That's a personal question. Why are you prying into my private life?" I said, "I'll tell you how I'm doing, pal. I don't want anybody to hear this." And I grabbed him by the throat, jerked him, and I started choking him, saying, "How do you think I'm feeling right now?" I had a nervous breakdown. That won't happen to you. I got to tell you how God works in my life, and I don't believe in God. There was an active member of my home group in that office that day. The only day Bill Daly had ever been in there, he's in there with a guy called John Flynn. They pull my fingers off this guy's throat, laid a card down, and says, "You need to go see this guy. We can't help you." They took me back to that garage, and I had guns and a hand grenade and some debt cord, and I was waiting on the war. And they sent my wife and kids to his family's house, and they sat with me for about a week, and I have no recollection of that time at all. And they told me about it later, and they took me down to this guy's office, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And I had taken life in sobriety as far as I could take it. And what that man explained to me that day has saved my life and my sanity up to and including tonight. He said, "Frank, you haven't had a drink in 13 months. He said, "Drinking ain't your problem." He says, "You got a living problem, and you better find a living answer to that living problem." He says, "You'll probably find that in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "There's a group of people walk down that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing." He didn't say, "Bring the body and the mind will follow." That is such crap. If somebody tells you that in an AA meeting, get away from them. They're trying to kill you. I'm telling you. Your mind is not going to follow you into an AA meeting. It's just not going to happen. It says in the book we're an action program. It means you got to do something. It ain't a still picture. He told me to do what you people are doing. He told me to get a God. I said, "I don't believe in God." And he said, "Whoever hangs the moon out at night, takes it down in the morning, pray to them." He said, "When you go to the meeting, sit in the front, shut your mouth and listen. Don't get up and wander around the meeting. Everybody knows you're a newcomer. They can tell by looking at you. You don't have to be seen. Have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't talk during the meeting, rattling papers and shit, get candy out of just..." He said, "The newcomers may want to hear. We don't care if you hear. Act like a responsible person when you're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Have respect for something in your life. You never had it before." And I watched you people when I got here. I watched how you acted. I watched how you treated each other. You can tell me anything you want to tell me, but I don't hear it. My head's as thick as my ass. I got to see how you do it. And I watched my home group. And I learned from them. I got here, and I got here at a lucky time. There was no crap like, "Love you till you can love yourself." If somebody tells you that, get away from them. They're trying to kill you. I want you to, he said it last night. That's what that really means is, we'll love you until you yourself can love somebody else. Not love yourself. Because think about this. Nobody in the world, anywhere, will ever love you as much as you do. I'm telling you that right now. And don't sit there and think, "Oh, that's not true. I was just totally devastated when I got here. I hated myself." Oh, horseshit. You didn't do anything for anybody when you were out there drinking and using. You say, "Oh, I think I'll just ruin my family's life. That'll help them. I think I won't pay the bills. I'll get the house repossessed and the car and everything. I don't, you know, I was just..." How many of you ever worked for charities when you were out there and gave to them and stuff? Oh, horse crap. I didn't ask if you stole from charities. I asked if you ever helped charities. See, you didn't. No one's going to love you like you do. They told me to go home and tell my wife and kids I loved them. And I said, "Whoa, honest program, I can't do that." And they said, well, just go do it. And so I went home and told them I loved them week after week and month after month. And one day I walked in that house and said, I love you. And something funny happened. I meant it. They had changed. I don't even know what program they'd been going to. And what I got out of that exercise from the old timers in my home group and my sponsor is this. When I get direction from a sponsor or an old timer, I don't have to think it'll work. I don't have to think it's cool. I don't have to want to even do it. I just got to get off my butt and go do it. And everything I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous has benefited me. It's helped to quiet my head and calm my stomach. I've never been told to this day to do anything in AA that's hurt me. I have never got bad direction from my sponsor to this day. All he wants from me is the best. And he wants me to have the best. And that's a quiet head and a calm stomach. And so I had to learn from these people. I had to be taught. Now, when you get sober, do bad things happen? Yeah, because life's out there. Bad things have happened. When I was 9 years sober, my dad of Alzheimer's died. But I got to see him before he died. We had a relationship because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm not a good son, but I acted like one. And when he died, my sponsor and Johnny Harris, they said, you go back and support your mom. Quit worrying about how you feel. She was married to him 50 years. Help her. And that's what I did. Before they lowered him in the ground, I put my 9-year medallion in his pocket. That man came to Okinawa and paid money out of his pocket and put me in. He didn't have insurance. He paid for me. He loved me. And I got to be a son 9 years to him. My brother got sober in my house. I loved my brother. He was a great AA. People couldn't believe he was my brother. He was so nice. They said, I can't believe you're Frank Jones's brother. Well, how about that? Well, he was. And he was a good man. And he got 17 years, 10 months sober, and he got a rare disease, and he died. I love my brother. He got sober in my house. 4 days later, my mom died. I go to meetings. I get my strength from members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They tell me if I'm in the middle of the herd, it's harder to spin out. So I hang out in the middle. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended a 31-year marriage in sobriety. Nothing traumatic happened. We grew apart. I come back from Desert Storm, and there was no affection, no love or anything there. And I stayed with her for 10 more years. And the kids got out of school and stuff, and I gave her everything, and I took the file cabinet of bills. How's that for a deal? My sponsor said, you're a fool, but I can pay him a lot easier than she can, and I did. And she's a good and decent woman, and I have nothing bad to say about her. She raised my daughters. That little girl I almost shot that day in Oceanside, she grew up, and I let her grow up, and AA was in our life, and my wife had gone to Al-Anon and sponsored people and was active, and she's general counsel for a medical corporation today in Indiana, and she has my 4 grandkids. And the little boy, who ain't little no more, he's 6'3", she named him after me. And it's not because I'm a good father. It's because you people taught me to stay out of her life and just be an example. My middle daughter has a master's degree and teaches 5th grade, and she's got my 1-year-old grandson now. And when she got married, I got to walk her down the aisle. And I'm still self-obsessed. So I'm walking her down the aisle, and she's absolutely gorgeous. She's blonde. I'm walking her down the aisle, and this old queen, about 80, leans out and says, you're beautiful, darling. I leaned over and said, thank you. Trace says, Dad, she was talking to me. I said, I know. They get a kick out of me today. They think I'm funny. They love their dad. My youngest daughter graduated from college and called me, and she was going to be a veterinarian. And she said, Dad, I don't want to go to school 3 or 4 more years. She said, I'm going to take my second choice. And I said, yeah, what's that, Beck? She said, I want to be a police officer. I almost crapped. And I said, I'll support you. I don't care what you want to do. I'm behind you 100%. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that. She went through LAPD 32-week academy and finished in the top 5. She did her probation at Rampart Division. And you see, I know what's out there because I was a police officer. And I met her partner one day, and I said, let me tell you something, Slick. If I ever get called to the hospital and my daughter's injured, when I arrive there, you need to be injured too, even if it's self-inflicted. He looked at Beck and said, is he serious? And she said, oh, yeah. It's my dad. And those girls are successful in spite of me, not because of me. I'm not a good father. But Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to act like a good father most of the time. That son that was born to me when I was in Vietnam spent 13 out of 17 of his years in state prison. He was a violent, angry person. I don't know where in hell he got it from. And he kept coming in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out of AA. And I told him one day, I said, Dave, maybe you're not an alcoholic, maybe you're a drug addict. And he went to Narcotics Anonymous, and he got 5 years clean and sober, and he had a sponsor, and he was doing well. And then him and his girlfriend broke up. And he went back out. Now, there's a hell of a reason to go out, isn't it? Like there ain't enough women in AA and NA. You got to be shitting me there. Good God. And he got stopped by LAPD TAC, and he's a convicted felon, three-time loser already, and he had two handguns, sawed-off shotgun, crack, heroin, baggy scales, and a ski mask. I guess he was going to Aspen. And he's back in prison for life. I love my son. You know, everybody that needs this doesn't get it. The people that want it get it. He couldn't drop that prison image. He couldn't drop being that macho tough guy and wearing his tank tops and shit in the meeting and his little hat cocked sideways. It just screams to you, look at me, I'm precious. It really does. Have you ever noticed how cute they look? They're just, it is his darling. Probably got an earring in both ears. I don't know. I didn't mean to say that. I apologize. All you dudes wearing hats, it's okay. You know, I don't care. You don't care either, so I know. But that's how we identify. Who's the newcomers? Everybody sitting here in a hat. Not a problem. I just learned to take mine off when I came in a building. That's all. I'm not judging anybody. I love you people in AA. And I got to tell you, and then I got to shut up, but Alcoholics Anonymous has quieted my head and calmed my stomach. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to be a macho tough guy sitting in the back with pinky rings and shit and be cool and have all the women and a big job and a big car and look slick and be cool and be tough. And the newcomers like me, we all sit back there together. And then the old timers in my home group ruined it for me. They ruined it. They said, you want to be macho? Drive a car with a driver's license. Get car insurance. Be registered to vote if you can. Don't validate yourself with other women when you're married. Stick your hand out to newcomers. Get to the meeting early and stay late. Give something back to AA. Get a commitment. Don't just suck the life out of it. Treat your children with respect. That's what they told me was macho. So you've ruined it for me. If all I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous is what I got today, I'm going to tell you something. I am really overpaid. I woke up in that hotel room up there with a clean, dry bed and clean sheets. And when I got here, I wasn't doing that. Before I came down here tonight, I had dinner with a lot of the folks on the committee, and it was a nice dinner, and I didn't throw it up with alcohol behind it. And I sat with some nice people. I've heard some great AA speakers here this weekend. And then before I came down to speak, I took a shower, I shaved, I got on clean clothes. And if I wasn't in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be wearing clean clothes. So if those three things is all I got, I'm overpaid. If you're new or used tonight, you don't have to remember anything I've said. It doesn't mean anything to anybody in here. I know that. If you don't have a sponsor, you ain't going to run out and get one because I spoke. If you don't have a commitment at your home group and your meetings, you ain't going to run out and get one just because I spoke. If you ain't working these 12 steps, you ain't going to run out and start working these 12 steps. You're going to stay a loser. Ain't no big deal. It's your life. It ain't mine. But if you're new or used, I think the only thing you should remember is usually read to you out of chapter 5 in the big book. And I think that first line of chapter 5 says it all, baby. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thank you.